You have arrived at your destination.
That's right, Wildlings. You have arrived at your destination. It's the Sean versus Wild podcast. I'm your host, as always, the man, the myth, the Sean Thriller Smith, the guy putting rad back into talk radio. And it's time to rock and roll all night and podcast every Tuesday. And today on the show, I am talking to Alex Reyes from Concealer. We're going to be talking about his time growing up in California, how he hopped in a van with the dudes in Artifacts Pareo and became an official Louisvillian. We're going to be talking about how he formed Concealer, some of his previous bands, his musical influences. We're talking a lot of awesome stuff. Most importantly, though, we're going to be talking about his brand new album. It's called Desperate Hands. He recorded it with Jordan Haynes at Early Gray Studios. A lot of high praise for Jordan on this podcast. Jordan, thanks again for all that you do for the Louisville community. But yes, we're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be debuting his brand new single. It's called I'll Walk Home. And guys, you'll be able to hear it first right here on the Sean vs. Wild podcast. On Friday, he will be releasing a music video for that. So make sure you're on the lookout for that. It's going to be awesome. But you're going to hear the song here first today on the Sean vs. Wild podcast. Thank you for that, Alex. And also, too, we're going to be talking about his brand new record label. It's called Fair Shot Records. He's getting that off the ground. He's already signed Concealer, obviously. He's already signed Street Sense, and he's looking for hot new acts. So if you have a band that you think he would be interested in, make sure you contact Alex at all the links here in the show notes for Fair Shot Records. But yeah, we have a great conversation, long conversation for you here today, so lots to enjoy. And guys, if you do enjoy this podcast, it's all because of my awesome sponsors at Audiophile Inc. that helps me keep the lights on here. AudiophileInc.com. Shane at Audiophile Inc. will take care of all your screen printing needs, whether that's shirts, t-shirts, koozies, sweatshirts, track shorts, whatever it is, whatever the weather, whatever idea that you have, he'll be able to put that on an article of clothing just for you and promote your business, your podcast, your band, whatever it is. And he's been printing my merch for over a decade. But yeah, you just go to audiophileinc.com, 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 and tell them that the Wild Man sent you. Shane's going to get you all taken care of, and he's going to give you the best deal in town, no matter what town you live in, because he will ship to all 50 nifty United States. Also, big shout out to Audible. You guys know Audible. It's an Amazon company. You can get all your audiobooks there, and just for listening to the Sean vs. Wild podcast, you will be receiving a free 30-day trial of Audible. Hopefully you guys signed up and got Bobby Brown's book last week. That show did fantastically. Thank you for all that had downloaded that. But hopefully you've been enjoying Dirty Rocker Boys by Bobby Jean Brown. But if not, feel free to sign up now. It's never too late. Go over there, pick up that book, or choose from over 180,000 audiobooks, guys. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/Sean vs. Wild. audibletrial.com/Sean vs. Wild. Again, audibletrial.com/SEANVSWILD. And also, guys, thank you so much for your continued tuning in, downloading. Last week, we were the number 3 music podcast on iTunes, and that meant so much, climbing that iTunes chart. Number 3. We are so close to number 1. Can we make it, guys? This is a call to action. I'm just going to ask all of you out there, please, if you haven't already, please like the show, share the show to your friends on social media, write a review, anything like that. And if you do that, hit me up on Facebook. I'll send you some free stuff. I've got some koozies and things like that. I will mail them out to you. Also, the merch store is getting completely revamped and re-upped here, so you'll have a lot. You'll be able to purchase a lot more merchandise online. But yeah, if you just please, share it, get a few people to like the page, get a few people to write a review or write a review yourself, or like it yourself, just hit me up whenever you do that, and I'll send you out some free stuff, okay? We'll make a deal. So yes, call to action right now. Let's become the number 1 music podcast in the country, even if it's just for one fleeting second. I will take it. I know we can do it. Thank you guys so much for tuning in each and every week. That's enough from me. Let's hear from Alex Reyes from Concealer, and let's get wild. So, dude, you moved all the way from Louisville to Florida, and I can guarantee you that sucked because I just moved somebody 30 minutes down the road, and I hated it.
Well, you know, lucky for me, I don't come with a lot. I don't have a lot. I pretty much live out of a suitcase.
Yeah, right. Oh, so typical musician is what you're saying.
Typical musician, yeah. Guitar in one hand and a backpack and a little bit of clothes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, my the key for me was I always bought, like, I would buy, like, T-shirts and underwear packs at Walmart and just wear them and then just throw them away. So I never had to carry a lot of luggage.
That's one way of not having to do laundry.
Yeah, total pro tip. But I also have a good friend that bought me this really nice military backpack, and it, like, once you filled it up, you could, like, unzip the zipper and it, like, expanded out like an accordion to, like, twice the size. And while I've toted it around a ton, just throwing your clothes away after you're done with them seems to work out quite nicely.
I mean, disposable clothing, man. You can always just buy a bunch of shit over at H&M and just wear it once, toss it out, since it's going to, you know, usually unthreads in the washer and the dryer anyways.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're just saving yourself the disappointment.
Exactly. Never learn how to wash clothes. No use.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, H&M, I'm wearing this shirt when it's in its prime, because it's never going to get any better than this. But yeah, Possible. Yeah, dude. So did you, like, let me ask you this. So you moved, like I said, from Louisville to Tampa. Did you just do it? You just moved everything in, like, one car trip? You didn't have to take, like, a U-Haul or anything, did you?
No, man, I just flew.
Oh, dude, even better.
I just flew. My girlfriend's been down here. She goes to University of Tampa, and just kind of found myself trying to plan trips out here constantly. And then when Concealer was on the road, I tried to get this guy that was booking our tour. I was trying to get him to, like, I was begging him to please give us a date in Tampa or just as close as he can get, just so I could see my girlfriend, you know?
Right.
So I think at some point I just kind of realized, like, the whole Concealer thing, like, it went into its own little hiatus thing. And, I, you know, kind of came down and visited my girlfriend, and we talked, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to come down here and do the same old shit I'm doing in Louisville and just serving at a restaurant.
Yeah. You know? Exactly.
And now, yeah, and we're happy, and she's actually in the room. She's probably watching Grey's Anatomy over there with her headphones in or some shit, but, but no, you know, I don't know. I guess I moved down the country, you know, I moved down for a girl.
Yeah.
I'm not ashamed to say that, you know?
Yeah, dude. And now she's too busy giving her attention to McSteamy, Alex, and you got to sit around and talk to me. Just two dudes on the phone.
McSteamy, I think that guy died, actually, she told me. She was really sad.
Spoiler alert, guys. I don't know anything about Grey's Anatomy, but there was a McSteamy. He's possibly dead. The jury's still out. Not sure. All right. But yeah, guys, this isn't just the McSteamy McDreamy podcast, even though that is probably the coolest nicknames for Alex and I you can give us. This is actually the Sean versus Wild podcast, and I am here with McDreamy Alex Reyes from Concealer, and we're gonna sit down and we're gonna talk some music here. And so I just got back from a long day of moving. Alex is enjoying a ginger and some liquor. What do you got over there to drink, buddy?
We got a 1783 Evan Williams small batch. You know, it was Cinco de Mayo, and I am Mexican, but it's also Derby weekend, so kind of went with the bourbon.
Yeah, man. Well, and it's funny too. Like, you're in Tampa, but you're still celebrating that Derby weekend like you're a Louisvillian. You know.
I still love Louisville, man. There's a lot about, like, you know, Louisville is, it's unlike any other place I've ever been to or lived. The art scene is just thriving. There's bands everywhere. I don't know. I think it's in a way it's like so artsy fartsy. It's kind of like a newly developing, like, Portland, Seattle, Washington style kind of place, you know?
Right. Well, you know, I read about 20 years ago that they said Louisville will be the next Seattle, and, like, Rolling Stone magazine or somebody said it in, like, 1996. And, you know, it's close, but I was really hoping we would have been there by now.
Yeah.
But we got Guitar Center. It's cool.
I mean, we got, you know, I was surprised to see, like, especially me being from California, like, seeing like the Pride Festival going on and having the mayor, like, they shut down Bardstown Road and the mayor marries a gay couple. And it's just like, wow, like this is, you know, it kind of put me in a place where it's like, wow, this is Kentucky.
Yes, it's much more progressive than one would think on the other side of the map.
Yeah, everybody thinks a bunch of honky tonks. Like, no way, man.
Yeah, dude, I haven't been to a honky tonk once in my life. We used to have one called Coyotes. I don't know if you remember that. And but yeah, I've never been. I wish it was filled with honky tonks. Not all the way filled with honky tonks, but we could have a whole urban cowboy scenario right now. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
But yeah, dude. So so you watched the Derby? Did you win? Did you win anything?
I didn't win anything. I watched bits of it. I was at work for the opening day and for the Oaks, and yeah, definitely a lot of people at the bar that I was serving, all they wanted to do is talk about horses and stuff. So I was like, all right, well, I don't know that much, but I was from Louisville, and I'll tell you about that.
Right. I'll tell you about the time I saw Churchill Downs. And the thing is from, like, I'm sure from the outside, it seems, you know, you always see like the B and C list celebrities are always there. The big hats, the suits, everything. But then like whenever you go to Churchill Downs, like if you're actually there, you're like, man, this is kind of hood. This isn't like this neighborhood isn't what I thought it would be for Churchill Downs.
You know, Jordan of Artifacts Pareo and Jeremiah as well, they used to live out in that area. And when I first started hanging out at their house, I was like, okay, like, you know, I was next to Churchill Downs. I wasn't too familiar with Louisville yet, but when I would go hang out with them, like, okay, this is, I stopped at a little store to go get some beer before I got to their house. And I was like, oh, all right, bulletproof glass, got it. All right, cool. It's kind of know where I'm at now.
Yeah, but, I guess after what, 8 o'clock, it looks like I have to only be able to, I'm only able to talk to you through a small window, and you got to pass the merchandise in a small drawer to
exactly
me.
That. Yeah, they had one of those. You ever seen those bulletproof kind of like boxes, and the only one door can open at a time.
Right. Yeah.
So they put the 6-pack of beer in, they have to shut it, and then it gives me a little green light that allows me to open it.
Perfect, guys. Welcome to Louisville. But dude, that was a big weekend for me too, because not only is it Derby, not only is it Cinco de Mayo, it is my birthday. So I did party. I did party on accident. So I picked a great day to be alive, you know, especially in this neck of the woods. But dude, today is a great day to be alive. We're sitting here chatting, and you were showing me some of the new concealer stuff. I'm so stoked to talk to you about it. I loved what you sent me. We are going to be premiering a brand new song on the podcast, ladies and gentlemen, listeners, be aware of that. But Alex, I want to take it back, because I've known you for a while. I've known you since, what would you say, maybe 2009, 2010, back in the Don Delia days?
Yeah, that's about the time I decided to jump in the Artifacts Pareo van and just end up in Louisville with nowhere to live.
Yeah. Well, see, I didn't even know this side of the story. So how do you go from California to Louisville? And I swear I'll stop interrupting you here. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. California, Louisville, more like, you know, $1,300 in rent to $300.
Yes.
It's significantly different. Yeah. And I had a lot of friends there too. You know, I met the Artifacts Pareo guys. I believe I was in a band out in South Carolina in like 2008, 2009 called Ophira. I was screaming for that band. And, I can't remember. I got to say it was the MySpace days. I think Corey Eves of Artifacts, he messaged us over MySpace and just asked about playing some shows together. And from there, we just kind of hit it off and became good friends. And then, yeah, I don't know what led to it. I think I booked them a show out in Fillmore, California, in my hometown. And for some reason, you know, they were joking. I think Jordan or Evan, Evan Redman used to be the singer for Artifacts Pareo. He looked at me. He's like, "You should just jump in the van and go back with us. You know, go back home with us, Louisville." And I was like, "Yeah."
Right.
And then from there, I literally went home and packed up my shit. Told mom. I literally called my boss and just like, "Hey, man, I'm leaving tonight." Like,
what is your
on a whim, man? Just super nomadic.
That's awesome, man. Like, to just have a free spirit like that. I always like to travel, but I have, you know, I have like a Nintendo collection and I have some records and stuff here and I have some stuff. I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready to part with this yet and just be a free spirit. What's the secret, dude?
Yeah, that's, as far, you know, I think what happened was 3 years prior, or those up until that point, like I had such a serious job for a couple of years. What it was, it was just, you know, I had a pretty good position, and I was making good money, had my cars, all this bullshit. I was playing like super adult. I had a little office space sitting next to a bunch of 50-year-olds with families and shit, and I was like, you know, me being, I think I was like 23 at the time. I was just kind of like, what the fuck am I doing?
Right.
You know, I kind of really stepped back and looked at my age and kind of realized that I can do anything. I have nothing to lose. I have nothing to, I mean, you know, if there's going to be a time that I want to go out and just adventure the world and play music and fuck up, it's going to be now. I don't want to do that later, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's a great way to look at it. And I mean, I think that's how, you know, that's how you spent your 20s. That's how we, you know, I spent my 20s. I think that's how a lot of probably listeners out there, you know, they're into the music scene and people that I know in bands and guests on this show have spent their 20s also. And that's kind of a great way to look at it, is like, this is the time when you have nothing to lose and everything to gain and everything to learn about what it is that you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, take advantage of your adolescence, you know. Well, you still got it.
Yeah, I know. I would, like, I just turned 32 and I'm just like, man, I really hope this podcast thing works out.
I've always told everybody, you know, I turned 29 about 2 weeks ago, and I always, you know, my girlfriend's younger, and I always tell her, like, I'm so old. She's like, you're not that old. And it's like, right, I mean I'm not that old, but I feel like 29 30, and even for you being 32, I feel like it's just such an awkward age. Because you feel, you know, you're too old to be hanging out with a bunch of college kids at the bar, but you're not old enough to take yourself too seriously or too serious. I don't know. It's just, I feel awkward because it's like, I feel like I should be in a better position, but I'm not allowed to be a kid anymore.
Right.
So there's that confusion going on there. But I mean, obviously, I mean, we get through it, you know?
Right. Exactly. I'm not ready to stop wearing black and start wearing pastels, for crying out loud. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Hell yeah, dude. I don't know. It's definitely kind of strange, especially for musicians our age, especially because we have so much responsibility and we have a home to take care of. We have rent we gotta make, and you know, we got a job we gotta sustain. And I think when you're younger, like, it's like, man, well, we're going to go on tour with our band. That's great. You know, do it while you live at your parents' house, because that's awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Free about those things. So,
that's great advice for anybody listening. If you still live with your parents, go ahead and go out on tour, because like you were saying, once the bills kick in, the family kicks in, the kids, the job, all that sort of thing gets a little too serious. Touring becomes a very difficult thing to do.
Hell yeah, man. And honestly, you know, it's, I'm sure you have gone a couple tours with a lot of great bands and kind of look back and be like, man, like, why didn't they make it? And it's like, well, they didn't make it because they got bills to pay. They can't just devote nine whole months out of the year to just touring. They can't do that.
Yeah. And I would say personally that had a big weight on the shoulders of my band, Uh-Huh Baby Yeah. Like, one of the reasons why we decided to go, you know, your separate ways, it's like, you just can't work for peanuts after a while. And that kind of sounds greedy, but it's like, dude, like, I need to make enough money to pay rent.
Yeah.
To a place that I barely live in, you know?
Yeah. That's another aspect, you know, that's another thing that I was looking at too. And, kind of had a lot to do with the whole like concealer hiatus breakup / not breakup. Like it was a very strange moment for me. And, it had a lot to do with just money. Like I think I ended up using the last of my money that was supposed to go to rent, and I fucking used it on the tour that I went on to eat. And you know, I guess that once I got back home and I felt the weight of it, it was just, I mean, it fucking broke me, man. I was like, it tore me apart. Cause I didn't feel, I don't know. I just felt like I fucking failed.
Right. You know? Yeah. You just didn't feel successful, or you felt like you should be in a place by now where you don't have to decide between eating and living. You know what I'm saying? Like,
exactly, man. Yeah.
But, well, let's take it before we get to the concealer hiatus. Let's go to the concealer inception. So you hop in a van. You're hopping the van with my dudes and Artifacts, and you move to Louisville. And where does the idea for concealer? Where is that born? How does that start? Well, I guess Don Delia, is that where that starts?
Well, the Don Delia thing. Here's the thing. So I lived in Louisville in 2010, and I actually lived there for about 8 to 9 months, and then went back to California. And then from there, I didn't come back to Louisville until, I believe, September of 2014.
Oh, okay. So there's quite a bit of gap in coverage.
Yeah. So, like, that's what's kind of weird with the whole timeline thing. Like, yeah, there was, like, I put a hard step into living into Louisville in 2010. Then I stepped back and came back to California. Then I went back in 2014. But, like, all my friends, everyone I've met, everyone I knew, everyone was still there. So it wasn't weird for me. You know, I think living there for the whole year back in 2010, it really made Louisville my second home.
Right.
Yeah. And I just felt so comfortable. Like even now, you know, I mean, even now I'm not sure what the future holds, but I could still think, you know, I like maybe I'll go back to Louisville. We don't know yet. I don't know. But I definitely comfortable with it.
Yeah. It's just like your home away from home, no matter where you are. You know, that's someplace you can go and have a huge network of homies to hang out with to support you, you know?
Absolutely.
But yeah. So how's concealer formed? Do you do that in California and then take it to Louisville? Or do you do that when you move back in 2014?
That's going to be in 2014. I always had this like acoustic project called Building a Better Me. And that's when I met the Artifacts guys. And if you're not familiar with that title, I named it after an album title from a band called Park. I think they're out of like Springfield, Missouri, I think. I don't know. They weren't too big. But, you know, I was still doing the Building a Better Me thing, and I kind of just got tired of the name. And I'm going to say that's early 2014 when I was back in California, and I kind of just threw the name away and stopped calling myself that. And in the meantime, still doing all my recordings, still writing songs. And then honestly, the name Concealer, it was in Louisville. I was probably 2 months into living in Louisville. So it was probably, you know, November. It was around Christmas time or around Thanksgiving or something, 2014. And I think I might have been listening to Thursday a lot. Always been one of my favorite bands, but they have a song called Concealer. And I was like, I'm just going to name my fucking band the name of the Thursday song. I was like, it sounds cool to me, you know?
Yeah.
And honestly, it's caught on. It's, you know, especially someone like, you know, when Jordan Haynes, I think we were recording or doing some acoustic stuff, he looked at me and he was like, how the hell did you land such a badass name?
Yeah, that's a great name. Absolutely. I like it. The double entendre of it both being like concealer, like you're hiding something, and then concealer, like the makeup. It's kind of, I don't know. It's got like a cool vibe to it.
It's definitely more known as the makeup. I thought it was kind of funny. I think I was over at a tap room one night when I first started concealer, and some girl looked at me and she was like, so like, what's like your like band's like name? And I was like, oh, you know, it's like concealer. She's like, oh, like the makeup? I'm like, no, you know, like the word.
Like the Thursday song.
Like the word, you know.
Right.
I definitely didn't want to be known as the makeup guy.
Yes, I named it after my favorite makeup, and you should check it out. And that'd be so great. Like, you'll play shows. You could play shows like totally like Motley Crue or something. But yes, we're concealer. We all wear makeup, so.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, You know, it's acceptable. Tons of dudes want to make
money. We're the Kiss of Louisville is basically what we're trying to say here.
But
yeah, that's a great band name. You nailed it. You knocked it out of the park on that one. That's for sure.
Thank you.
And it's kind of awesome that you named it after Thursday's song. I love Thursday so much. Especially like when I was in high school, they were the jam for me. I always thought they had just like amazing lyrics. And when Understanding in a Car Crash came out, when I saw that video on Fuse, that's kind of like one of those big turning point videos for me where I was just like, man, this is a new sound that's like heavy and dark and but poppy and accessible. And I really like it, man. I think I'm a punk rocker, dude.
Yeah, I'm going back to the Fuse days.
yeah, dude.
You know, I think, you know, what's crazy is like all the bands. Like I never had an older brother and older. I have older brothers and I have older sisters, but none that really taught me anything about this kind of music, emo, screamo, what have you. I think what did it is when I was younger, there used to be this channel called MTVX. You remember that?
I remember two. I remember MTV2, but I don't remember ever seeing MTVX.
So it was. I mean, it was on. For at least 2 years, because I remember those 2 years, how much it shaped everything. And it wasn't just Thursday. I mean, that's, I found Thursday, I found Trust Company, I found, I even fell in love with Finger 11 and like Edema, if you remember that band.
Oh, yeah, dude.
I wasn't the craziest new metal kid, but. It was such a variety of music. What it would be Rancid, Salvation, or from there it would go to like AFI, Days of the Phoenix, then back to like Bad Religion, American Jesus, you know, stuff like that. So it was like that channel literally just fucking defines me now. Like,
I don't know much about this MTVX, but I think that we should bring it back. I think I'm going to write a sternly worded email today.
Dude, I wish we could, man.
I wish I could just turn on the TV and see music videos. Like, I mean, I know you can literally do that with YouTube, but there's just something about like having an MTV or a Fuse or VH1 or anything where you just can turn it on and they'll just show you some stuff at random and you might find something new. Like, I really like that.
It would be absolutely wonderful, but I mean, I guess at that, you know, in that time, I got to say, I was probably like 10, 11 years old, getting ready for school, turning that shit on at like 6:30 in the morning until I left at 7:40, you know?
Yep.
And I would just watch video after video as I'm getting ready, eating breakfast, doing what I had to do to get to school. But man, like this is how, you know, sometimes I have to remind myself, it's like, I'm not that old, but I'm old enough to where it's like, I would see a band play getting ready for school, fall in love with it, write it down, and when I would run home to get on Napster to fucking download the thing, and it took like a day and a half on Napster.
Yeah, dude, it took me 2 days. I couldn't use the phone for 48 hours, but I got the brand new Spine Shank album, and it was great.
Yeah, I really, really dedicated, really devoted my time to getting my hands on it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that because you're like, yeah, I'd turn it on and I would get ready for school and I would just watch it until I had to leave, you know, catch the bus or go to school or whatever. That is actually how I found Linkin Park. The first time I had ever heard Linkin Park was I woke up and just flipped on TV or whatever and I was, you know, getting ready and they played One Step Closer. And I was like, oh, dude, there's like ninjas flipping in the background and I think dude had like bright red hair, or I don't know if he had like the yellow.
Chester Bennington has Chester Bennington, I think, always had the I'm trying to figure out which one it was. I think it was Mike Shinoda that had the red hair.
Had the red hair, and then Chester Bennington had like the yellow hair, like the Power Man 5000 yellow hair, you know what I'm saying? And like,
oh yeah, man.
And I was just like, dude, who is this band? They didn't sound like anything I'd ever heard. And I'm like super into heavy music, which it was just new metal for me at the time. Growing up in Indiana, I didn't know what heavy music really was. But then I was like, you know, who is this? And then about, I don't know, 2 days later, whatever the weekend hit, I'm riding around with my cousin who's old enough to drive. And he was like, man, have you heard this band called Linkin Park? And I was like, dude, I just found them a couple days ago. And we both went and bought the Linkin Park CD at the Jefferson Mall. And that is how I found Linkin Park.
I think, dude, that's awesome. I think Linkin Park, Hybrid Theory was the, I'm going to say in the first, anywhere in the first five CDs I've ever purchased in my life. And my sister and I, she's around the same age. She's about 2 years older than me, but 3 years, sorry. But we used to have to share everything, including CDs.
Right.
So her and I ended up just being into the same music. Like, we both kind of caved in and really got into all the same bands and everything. And, you know, we shared CDs. We shared a Walkman, you know, that, you know, one day it was her turn to take it to school. One day it was my turn to take it on the way to school. And yeah, Linkin Park was, one of the first five CDs I've ever owned. And I remember my mother, she would only buy me CDs at the fucking Kmart, because apparently at Kmart, they're not allowed to sell anything with, bad words.
Really?
And, yeah, well, I mean, maybe that has changed now, but back in that day, it was funny, like, she would only agree to buy it if we can find it at the Kmart. And we were both born, we're born and raised, and I'm not anymore, but my mom's a Jehovah's Witness, so they've got some really stubborn views on a lot of shit. But, like, yeah, that was the only way to convince her. I remember I bought Blink-182, Enema of the State, which, after I bought it, I went home, and I think I might have been 9 or 10, and I think I literally fucking cried for her not to throw it away. So what she did is she threw away the cover, just the front booklet. She let me keep the CD though.
Dude, honestly, for somebody 9 or 10 years old, I was going to say, when you were like, I almost cried. I was like, dude, she threw away that cover, didn't she? Or she broke that CD or something.
She didn't break it, but she didn't like me looking at the cover.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Because, yeah, the woman on the cover has done a few adult films, and I can see why it might make you feel a certain way.
Just a young kid, man, pre-puberty.
Yes, I didn't buy it for the cover. I bought it for the catchy song titles, Mom.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah, that one, that's one, and I think she also, oh, man, she bought me the Kid Rock record, Cocky.
Oh, nice.
And the minute that thing was opened, that he, I don't know if you remember this, if you, or if you own the CD, but the minute you opened up that fucking CD on the disc, just a giant fucking middle finger.
Oh, dude, that's the, that's from the Devil Without a Cause, CD, I believe, that you're, yeah,
that
might be
one?
Thinking about, but yes, it is a giant middle finger. I had Devil Without a Cause, but I had definitely checked out before Cocky, but yes.
Yeah.
Maybe all his CDs have a middle finger on it. We just don't know about it because we don't know anybody that owns more than one.
Yeah, I definitely don't own any, Kid Rock CDs anymore, but yeah, she was definitely not happy to see that.
Yeah,
so,
dude.
Yeah, I feel like at a young age, man, it's always been like a battle of like what my mom will let me listen to. And
dude, you know, here's some little inside information though. Like, we were talking about like Linkin Park and Kid Rock and stuff like that. Like, you know, we laugh, but dude, at the time, like, that's the stuff that got us into what we're into today. And so like a story is like that I wanted to say that I wanted to tell you was, you know, one time I was doing a podcast here. It's the only time some people ask me, like, do you ever edit your podcast? And there's only been one time that I edited it because literally we were talking about Linkin Park and I was like, man, Linkin Park used to be my jam. And then they just, I don't know if you ever listened to their last album that they put out. It's like, I mean, it might as well have been like a Maroon 5 album or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't heavy. It was like very more, a lot more mainstream.
Yeah.
And I just like gave a scathing review of that. And then literally like 2 days before the podcast aired, Chester Bennington died. And I was like, well, I better edit this rant about how much I didn't like the new Linkin Park CD.
Yeah. Yeah. That could definitely put you in a bad spot.
Yeah. So, but Linkin Park used to just be so awesome. And like all that stuff, like, yeah, we look back on like, you know, Kid Rock, like having a Kid Rock CD, just, you know, being like, my gosh, what was I thinking? But you know what you're thinking? You're thinking, hey, I want a ball with a ball. You know what I'm saying? Hey, you know, I'm a cowboy. It's just the way it is.
I think what it is with a lot of these older artists, you know, we can always make fun of the kids who go to shows and do the whole fucking, you know, play your old stuff, whatever. When I listen to someone's new record, a lot of times I like to understand how their age reflects on that record. And I think it has a lot to do with it. Like, it's like, I'm not sure if you're a Thrice fan. I'm a huge Thrice fan.
I love Thrice.
And yeah, good. It's a good, great band. And honestly, like, I remember I got into them at a very young age too. It wasn't Identity Crisis. It was Illusion of Safety.
Yeah, that's the jam, you know, right there.
Illusion of Safety. And it had Deadbolt on it. And it was great. And like every year, or, you know, as years went by, I kept really giving into every single record that would come out. And now that I look at it, you know, now that I take a few steps back and look at it from a huge perspective, I'm like, yo, like every record just reflects their age in the music industry. Like, it really does. Like, where they at, like where they're at as people and where they're at as artists. And it's like, man, I love when Thrice used to scream more. And I was like, well, maybe this record, I mean, it's not supposed to scream, you know? It's like, maybe there's nothing for them to scream about.
Right, exactly. You know? Maybe they're at a point in their life when they just need to be upset in a much more subdued way, or they need to get their art out in a little bit more subdued way.
Yeah. Yeah, but I love it. I love the authenticity, honestly. And I think that's what really grabs me about bands like Thrice, you know, to them and some Circus Survive stuff also. I mean, it's just, you feel their age, and I love it.
Yeah, I feel that. I like that you said that so much. That's a great way to put it, especially for Thrice. I just think that they got, I don't know, just so awesome. Like, to me, they're a band that didn't put out a bad album amongst all their albums. Another band that was kind of like that for me was Coheed and Cambria. I never thought Coheed put out a bad album, because I just felt like they took a chance and did something new most of with every album, you know, as they went through. And I always thought that they were like a band that just never put out a bad record.
You know, I've always enjoyed listening to Coheed and Cambria music, like, instrumentally.
Right. Yeah.
Even at an early age, I could never really get into Claudio's voice. I definitely knew a lot about them. When I was up in Louisville, I worked for Live Nation. I used to do a lot of stuff over at Mercury Ballroom and stuff like that. And I got them set up with all their shit and Saved the Day and all them. And I sat there stage side and watched Coheed and Cambria. And I was like, man, like, and I met that Claudio dude. The sweetest fucking bear you'll ever see in your life, or ever meet in your life. He's such a huge dude. And like, I don't know, he's just so nice. But man, I sat there, I'm like, I still don't like his voice. Like, I just, it's like, I love the music. I love how technical it is. I love what they're getting at. I think it's just, his vocal pitch is just not something for me.
Gotcha. There's always just one of those bands that people love and you just don't understand it.
I think I gave Coheed and Cambria a lot of chances as far as, like, you know, when I was first getting into Thursday, believe it or not, even though they're one of my favorite bands ever, I didn't like Jeff Rickley's voice.
Yeah, I can see that.
I had to get used to it. It was such a weird, throaty, like, sound. Eventually, I couldn't get the damn songs out of my head, to the point to where I just ended up falling in love with it. And I was like, no, fuck this. I love it. Like, I had to convince myself that who am I kidding? If there's songs stuck in my head, I fucking love it.
Yeah, I can see that. Jeff Rickley is like, he's almost like not that good. You know what I'm saying? Like, from a technical standpoint. But for some reason, it's the storytelling, it's the lyrics, it's everything with the music, and it all just kind of fits, you know? So
it's all very poetic. It's very, yeah, it's beautiful. So But yeah, and there's a lot of bands like that now, and I think it definitely opens up my it definitely opens up the way I view things now. You know, it's like I can listen to a band that I don't care for, but I can tell you it's going to get big. You know, it's right. I don't care to listen to this, but I can tell you there's going to be a lot of people that do.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Well, and I have bands like that too. Here are two bands right off the top of my head that everyone loves that I don't understand the appeal. Number one, My Chemical Romance. I think that they're a fine band. I think that even in the sea of bands that came out around the exact same time as them, like they were okay. You know what I'm saying? But they're like held in regards of being like just one of the greatest bands ever. And Gerard's voice is a big reason why I don't like My Chemical Romance. I don't think that that guy has a very good voice. I feel like as technology progressed, his voice was edited in the studio to sound good, you know, on certain things. Second band like that for me is Brand New. Not a big Brand New fan either.
Really?
People act like they're just like the Beatles or something, and I'm like, they're okay, man, but my favorite era of Brand New is whenever they were kind of sounding like Taking Back Sunday on Your Favorite Weapon.
I think they had what's his name, John Nolan, wasn't he a part of Brand New for a little bit?
I remember them and Taking Back Sunday had a big beef back in the day.
But I don't think he was a part of it. I think they had something to do. They were heavily associated with each other. You know, Brand New is one of those bands, too. I mean, it's probably good that you don't like them, especially now after all the Jesse Lacey bullshit. I don't know if you heard about all that.
Yes, I am aware of that. I do have the internet.
Anyway, I've met some people, like, recently that still don't know about that. It was weird to think or find out. I guess they're not, like, super fans. They just kind of, like, have it on a mix CD that they play in their car, you know?
I cry to this sometimes.
But, you know, another interesting thing about Brand New, bringing them up, is, like, something I've noticed is they caught such a strong second wind. You know, like, Brand New was out, like, our time, like, our prime. I don't want to say our prime, but I guess, I mean, when we were younger.
Right.
And they were doing really, really, really well. But then, you know, what I'm trying to get at, it's like, I'll go to like, I used to go to a show at Spinelli's and see a fucking like 15-year-old wearing a Brand New shirt. And I'm like, yo, you have an older brother, don't you? And it's like, no, they don't. Like, they just had such a strong second wind with all these younger kids and it fucking spread like wildfire. And I was like, how the hell did this happen? Like, how, you know, I mean, I know you and I, we look at bands and we look at bands from the past and we're like, how come that band didn't catch a second wind? You know, they keep their fans, or they kept their fans that are the same exact age, but they never caught the younger crowd.
Right.
But Brand New did. Brand New caught a whole, like, this, you know, I think, you know, honestly, I hope she doesn't mind. Sorry, honey. one of the first days I ever met Kaylee, she walked in because I actually used to be her boss at the Journeys over at the St. Matthews Mall. And when the first time she ever walked into work, she was wearing a fucking Devil and God Is Raging Inside Me with like a red flannel. And I'm like, and I kind of looked at her for a second. I think I kind of questioned her. And I said, do you know who that band is?
Like, right.
You know, yeah. And you know, Kaylee's 22 and I'm 29. So obviously we're not that far apart, but enough to kind of like ask, how do you know about that band? You know, like that was a band from my time.
Right.
So anyways, to close that whole Brand New thing up, I got to give it to them. Like they caught such a strong second wind and I don't understand how it happened, but it totally did.
I tell you what, it's probably the same way. Like, you know, when we were kids, we're like, dude, I really like Motley Crue, or hey, I'm really into the 80s stuff. Cause I felt like VH1 and stuff like that turned me into such like a 80s metalhead. And, you know, here's a band that is at that point was, you know, 8 years past their prime and, you know, 18 years into their career by the time I found them, you know what I'm saying? And now yeah. I love them and I think that they're amazing and they put out all their best work before I was even, you know, had any idea that they were even a thing. So
yeah, man,
maybe that's crazy. The key, you know, maybe that's why, maybe just this new generation is just getting into old music because it's old to them. And to us, we're like, dude, this band is, you know, super relevant still, or was, I don't know.
Well, you know, honestly, like, so I'm not sure if you're ready to get into it or anything, but like this whole record label little thing that I'm doing and everything, you know, it's basically, I've always felt like I've had a knack for music that's just good in general, and good in a sense that it's like people are going to like this. Like, and like I said earlier, like, I'm not the kind of person that is so strongly opinionated, like, oh, if I don't like it, then no one else should. Like, I can listen to a band and I know people will like it. And I think that old 2000s, 2005 to 2006, that sound, I think everything comes in waves and everything comes around in circles.
Right.
And that's on, I mean, I may not be anywhere near 100% correct with this, but I think like the whole emo pop punk kind of, like, you know, the Juliana theory and like stuff like that sound, like Reggie and the Full Effect, like it's coming back around to where 15, 16 year old kids are going to be like, yo, listen to this new fucking sound. And it's new to them, but it's not, you know, obviously you and I both know that it's definitely not a new sound, but I feel like everything I've watched, you know, it is, you know, Knock Loose, fucking love the dudes, love the guys, but think of like bands 10, 12 years ago that were doing what Knock Loose is doing, you know, and I love it.
Yeah.
But that only kind of like leads me to believe like everything comes around in circles. It all comes back around. And I don't know. I mean, that's a strong perspective that I have with this label that I'm, you know, I kind of just have it just to, for one, I realize it's like, well, I'm a little older now. I'm not the oldest, but at the same time, like, I got rent to take care of. I got things I got to do. I can't be on the road. I can't be touring all the time, man. Like, you know, I just can't.
Right.
So I was like, how, you know, this is my attempt of how do I stay in the music industry without actually having to be that guy in the band? How do I just stay close to it? You know?
Yeah. I feel that 100%. That's why I have this podcast. Cause I was like, dude, I'm just at this point where I don't know if I'm ready to get back on the road or if I care to start over, you know, once Baby I broke up. But I'm like, I love my dudes. I love still, you know, having cold beers and you know, enjoying the company and conversation of, you know, artistic people. Like, I still love that. I still love the travel. And I'm just like,
I mean, yeah.
How about I just start a podcast where I can help bands, you know what I'm saying, just in a different capacity.
You yourself definitely knows a lot about the whole touring experience and kind of how it builds a specific kind of character. I mean, you were on Warped Tour, you know, didn't you guys do you guys were the barbecue pit band or something?
Yeah, 13 and 14, like, we were on there both years.
2013, 2014, like that's, you know, it's, I feel like once, when you get to do stuff like that, it really kind of shows you like how awesome, you know, the whole touring thing can be. And I don't know, I feel like that's as much as like it's in the past, and obviously we can't relive the past, but we kind of want to find a way to hold on to what we love.
Yeah.
And we want to hold on to the things that kind of made us who we are, which honestly for me, like, and I'm not sure if you could say the same about yourself, but I can definitely say that touring and being a musician has definitely just really shaped who I am as a person.
Oh, it definitely has. To me, that was my identity. And that was the hardest part about like going from musician to podcaster was just like, am I going to lose my identity here? You know what I'm saying? Like, I was a musician for, you know, a serious musician for 13, 14, however many years, you know, in a band. I was a band guy. And now I'm like, now I'm a podcaster. And I actually kind of made the transition pretty seamlessly, but it was like something that kept me up at night. You know what I'm saying? Like for months before I even had the courage to do my first podcast episode, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, all, you know, it, I think it's all awesome though. Like, you know, you found your way to, you know, to stay in it in a way, you know, even though it's a podcast, it's kind of a different thing. You're in it by, you know, I mean, these podcasts that you have, people you interview, the people you talk to, it's all music related. It's awesome. You know, I've listened to a good handful of your podcasts before, and I think it's cool that we can have that. And that's our attempt of holding on to our character without actually having to be in a band and going out and touring and doing all that anymore, you know?
Right.
And I love it.
Yeah, fantastic. And, you know, I love it too. Like, that's, I love this. And I'm so stoked that you got this label coming off the ground here. And I think that what we should do before it gets too late in the day here, because we're just having a great time. I think we need to get down to a little business. And I want to play the brand new Concealer single. I want to world premiere it. Guys, this is the first time anyone in a public forum has heard this. And Alex, give us some deets on I'll Walk Home.
I'll Walk Home. So I'll Walk Home was a song. I believe it's a song I wrote back when, like, Tucker and Jared were back in the band. We, I think the whole concept is just kind of like feeling so alone in like a crowded room. And like being around friends that are very like-minded, but you still feel isolated. Like you still kind of feel like you're on your own. And I think at the end of the day, I can always, when I came up with the name, I think, I think one night I went out to Bardstown Road and had some drinks with a bunch of friends, and they went on to doing other things. And I kind of like bailed and I went home. I walked home. I didn't get an Uber. I didn't do any of that. Like all the way, I mean, I guess it's not that far, but from Bardstown Road all the way to like the U of L campus, like I just walked home.
Right.
And that's kind of where the name came from. It's kind of like, hey man, like I'm my own person. I don't really care to fit in. Like even though we are like-minded people, you know, I still stand my ground on who I am, and I'll walk home if I have to.
Yeah,
that's where the name comes from.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, let's go ahead and premiere it right now, guys. This is Concealer with I'll Walk Home. right, everybody. That was Concealer with I'll Walk Home, the very first single off of the brand new album, Desperate Hands, that comes out June 1st. What do you think about that plug, dude? I just seamlessly nailed that one.
That's awesome.
Yeah, thanks, dude. I real pro at work, guys. Take notes. But
real pro at work.
Yeah. So, yeah, new album Desperate Hands that comes out June 1st. And Alex, tell me about the album. I know you came up here from Florida to lay it down.
Yeah. You know, the Desperate Hands record, it was one of those things where it's like there was a minute where I kind of, and I know if Jordan listens to this, I hope he doesn't fucking hate me, but there was a moment where I hooked up with one of the guys, or hung out with one of the guys.
I hooked up with him. No, I didn't. I hooked up with him.
We all know how people misinterpret shit now.
Right.
I hung out with one of the guys in Tides of Man. Super cool fucking dude. And I met him through the Artifacts guys, and I was asking him about, you know, studios around here and if he knows any good places. So originally I started thinking about maybe recording the record down here. I didn't really get a lot of the answers that I wanted to hear. So like, I was like, well, fuck this. I just texted Jordan and I was like, hey, like what, you know, when do you have any time available? Like at this point now, so far into the Concealer deal and everything that I do musically, I mean, honestly, like Jordan is just kind of like, he's a part of my band at this point. It's kind of what I decided. I was like, no, like, he was a big part of Tragedy Planner. He was a big part of Don Delia. Like anything, he's one of those kind of dudes where like, if he tells me it sounds like shit, I don't get mad at the guy. Like I believe him. You know, like I have such full faith in this guy because I just understand his talent. And yeah, I mean, bought my plane ticket. He gave me, you know, we arranged the week that I spent the night at his place every single night. We woke up every morning, got up around 9 a.m., got there at 10 or, you know, 10, 11, 12, maybe at some point. I don't know. But we got our coffee. We got our whole day going. And then we would sit in the studio at least until like 11, you know, midnight, you know, and really got it done. You know, it's like no band, no nothing. Just him and I and 2 days of Jake Long in the beginning.
Right.
It was awesome. I mean, I feel very good about it. And I think it was great for him to really take on the project with such a positive attitude.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I know for a lot of other people, he would definitely ask, well, where's your band?
Right, yeah.
You know, and I found it very special that he didn't question me that way. He was like, well, who do you want to get to do drums? Do you want to pay Corey Eves off? Do you want to find someone else? Do you think if we pay Jared, do you think he'll come back to Concealer and play drums just for the studio? And he was just so with it. He was like, he made me feel good about the concept of me going in and just doing a record by myself.
Right.
And yeah, and that's, you know, aside from him just being really good friends for a very, very long time, yeah, it was very special to know that that's how much confidence he has in me. He's like, yeah, we can get it done. It's just, you know.
I feel like Jordan is so instrumental, no pun intended, but he's like so instrumental to so many Louisville bands. You know what I'm saying? Like Jordan's production is a key ingredient to the Louisville sound. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely.
The sound that people are drawn to, and they're like, man, Louisville puts out some really talented, you know, bands. So much of that has to do with Jordan's production and what he'll do to make you sound great. Exactly. If there's a lifetime achievement award for Louisville music, we should nominate him first. Okay. For his outstanding production skills.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, the more and more I go around and whenever his name was brought up, like people know him. I texted him the other day. Not the other day. It was probably about a month ago now, I was doing a photo shoot with this girl named Anna out here in Tampa, and she does a lot of cool stuff. And she went on tour with Guerrilla Warfare and was like their photographer and everything. And I brought up Jordan Haynes. She's like, oh, you know Jordan Haynes? I'm like, I fucking love Jordan Haynes. He's like, brother, like that guy's literally like my brother. And we started talking, like I was, you know, I texted him, I'm like, hey, by the way, like people in Florida know of your name, but don't know you personally. Like you're kind of a big deal. Like you're very talented. Like I always want him to know that. It's like, you are just, he's so good at what he does.
Yeah.
And as I've said in the past, the guy can polish a turd beyond belief.
Yes, like, he can. And if you don't believe me, you better listen to Trash Talk from Uh-Huh Baby Yeah. Just kidding. He did a great job. And it sounded pretty okay to start with.
Oh, man. the guy can really, I mean, he really has an ear for making people sound good. And I'm glad I work with him. Every time I see other bands going to him, I'm glad they're working with him. I won't throw their name out, but I'm currently talking to a band out in California that's looking to sign to the label. And they brought his name up without knowing, literally without not knowing how much I am associated with him already.
Right.
And I was like, we were thinking of going recording with this guy, Jordan Haynes. And I was like, oh, really? You know, I kind of played the stupid part. I was like, oh, really? And then I kind of broke to him like, hey, by the way, that's like my blood.
Oh, right.
Like if you want to work with him and you want to work with my label, like we can make that happen. Like this will work perfectly. So, I mean, his name has gone all the way across to California to some of these bands. And I think at times, I don't think even he realizes that. It's like, he's doing well, man. He's got such a talent. He's got such an ear for music. Aside from his own band, he can make any band sound good.
Yeah, I agree. And
yeah,
he definitely made Uh-Huh Baby Yeah sound magic. And I feel like that was like missing from the album before, which I really liked, and the album after, which I really liked. But I think that the real magic is in the album that Jordan did for us, because we had two different producers on the, you know, on the one before and the one after. Right. But that he can capture the raw magic that is sometimes buried in a band, you know, like has to really he's able to really bring that out of him. And thanks, Jordan. It's the Jordan Haynes Appreciation Podcast. His name gets brought up at least once a podcast, so
yeah. He deserves it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Jordan, we'll have to get you back on the show, and we'll do a round table and we'll all talk about how cool you are. But
yeah, you can always keep Jordan coming back. Always keep up with what he's doing.
Exactly. And I want to try to also talk about, just in more detail here, because you're talking about the label. You got a record label that you have started called Fair Shot Records, guys. Definitely check it out. And not only will the new Concealer album be out on it, but you are also working with Sean versus Wild alum Street Sense as well.
So
how's the label? Like, is everything going? How's it going, bro? Tell me all about it. Give us the deets.
It's definitely like, I will say this first. It's as far as on the business side of things, it's a slow return, but I think in the bigger picture of it all, it all started with a good buddy of mine. Him and I were talking, we were having a conversation, and I was talking to him about Puckett and about how Puckett passed away and how it kind of took a huge hit, at least for my band, and I'm sure for other bands. Like, you know, he was a good friend, and also he was a good person to, as far as like management. Like, he, you know, yeah, we were on Little Heart Records, but I think a lot of it, like, he had a lot of guidance.
Yeah, he was an integral part of the entire music scene for Louisville.
Yeah, the guy really fucking helped us. Ooh. But you know, after I told him, I'm like, man, he's like, how many bands were left on the label after he passed? And I was like, God, I think at the very least 20, 25. And he was like, holy shit, it's a lot of bands. I was like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. We're shooting the shit, talking. He goes, well, why don't you keep it going? I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, well, why don't you keep it going? He's like, you seem to know a thing or two about the industry and how bands get paid and promoters and agencies. And I mean, you seem to know, you have a pretty strong foot in it all. He's like, you kind of know how it goes. He's like, why don't you try to start your own label and maybe reach out to some of the bands and give them a new home now that Little Heart's gone. And that's kind of how it started.
That's amazing.
And yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it's still, even this far into it, it's still surreal to me, because it's just like, I never even thought of owning a music label, but I think my goal with it is I see what all the other big time labels do, even the indie ones, even the smaller ones. I see what they do to their bands. They give them all this bullshit marketing shit about, I mean, they are smart about it, but they give them all this bullshit about, I mean, fuck, they can't play within the same 90 mile perimeter within 90 days.
Right.
You know, which marketing wise, like, I guess that's kind of that's a smart move, but I don't want to be that person putting shit like that in a contract.
Yeah.
You know,
And there's so much red tape when it comes to label stuff too, that, you know, like Little Heart didn't have. And that's such a great example to have, like, because there's other labels out there that are just like, yeah, you know, hey, even though you paid for your album, well, we're going to remix it and we're going to have it remastered by some other person, and you might get it back and it might not sound anywhere near what you wanted it to be. And then now you have a bill for like $5,000 that you, before your album even comes out, you now owe like, you know, X amount of dollars and stuff like that. And then you're basically buying your albums, you know, for every album you sell, you might get a dollar of it. Whereas like, you know, I don't know.
Which ends up being bullshit.
Right. Yes.
I mean, I've been a slave of it. I've been in bands that were signed to a label, and I got to look at the contract and I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, I mean, every time we try to progress, we just keep digging a hole. It doesn't work out that way. And I think the whole approach of this label, and I mean, obviously, even by the title, the name of it all, it's just my first question to every band I'm talking to. And right now I'm currently talking to this really awesome band out of Orlando, and I'm talking to them, and I asked them, and I said, look, what can a label do for you that you cannot do for yourself? It's like, if you can make your own t-shirts, you can book your own tours, you can buy your own van, you can make your own CDs, you can do all your own shit, what is it that I can do for you that you can't do for yourself? And that's the label I want to be.
Right.
I want to be that help that really, really extends that hand that they never thought existed. And because that's the thing, it's like, and especially you and I being in bands before, like, we know, you and I know, we can make our own stickers, we can make our own CDs, we can push our own shit, like, we can do all our own stuff all on our own without a label. But I'll tell you something, man, it's definitely different reaching out to companies like Alternative Press Magazine and Revolver and whatever. It's really different reaching out to them as a band than it is reaching out to them as a label.
Right.
I have gotten different responses. Like, you know, I think 2 years ago or so, I kind of reached out to Alternative Press Magazine from a Concealer email. No response. I sent out an email to Alternative Press from the Fairshot Records, and like Alex at fairshotrecords.com. And all of a sudden, fucking immediate response from the campaign manager. It was just like, I don't know if that matters a lot, but like, I was like, dude, like, appearance is so important to people. It's weird. It's really weird.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, that's how, that's basically the same kind of response I was going to say that when I would get, if I ever wanted to reach out to anybody, like any kind of press or whatever, as a band member, yeah, it just gets, you might as well be a Nigerian prince. You know what I'm saying? You're just going to be sending out mass emails that people will delete, you know?
So, dude, yeah, I mean, like, sometimes it isn't good for you to present yourself as, or present yourself as yourself. Like, you are someone who represents someone else. And all of a sudden, they have your attention. It's just, it's crazy. It's weird. You know, I've tested the theory before, and at least for me, it's just like, I get a hell of a lot more attention, like, from these bigger people with what I'm doing with the label. And, you know, I'm not the first person to do it. I feel like a lot of bands have done that. Like, I don't know if you've ever been a big fan of Green Day, but I watched like a mini documentary. You know, like, one of the guys from a different band that they would play with, they played it in some shitty house up in the woods. And they played with this band, and this guy created Lookout Records. He created Lookout Records not because they had money, but just to present themselves as somebody worth giving attention to.
Right.
And I was like, man, I think about that a lot. It's just kind of like, you know, with this label, I kind of want to do the same thing. Like, I want me and my friends to feel like we're a part of something. I feel like we can move forward, and we can move forward on our own. We don't have to depend on touring and sitting around and waiting for fucking Sony Enterprise to pick us up. Like, we don't got to do that. Like, we can do it all on our own. We can make our own CDs. We can make our own t-shirts. We can make our own stickers. We can make our own shit. We can make everything. We can do everything. It's like, so let's put a name on it. And that's the record label. That's what it is. It's just me and a bunch of fucking friends putting up a front that we want to have. It's like, we're professional. We're all part of a team.
Right.
And I love it. And the new Street, I'm sure you've already heard part of the new Street Sense record. It fucking rips. It's awesome.
It is awesome. Yes.
I was very happy with it.
Another Jordan Haynes way to knock it out of the park again.
yeah, absolutely. Always Jordan Haynes.
Yeah, man. Always. Yeah, guys, if you are in a band and you haven't went to Jordan Haynes, just go to Jordan Haynes. It's economical. Jordan Haynes, you don't even have to sponsor the podcast. I'm just going to give you a great recommendation right here, right now.
Yeah, save yourself the trouble and just go to Jordan.
Yeah,
Jordan,
exactly.
Thing for you.
Exactly. You might as well just save yourself the trouble. You owe it to yourself. You don't need that. Stress is bad for the heart, guys. You don't need that. Just go to Jordan. Live a long, healthy, happier life.
He's certainly the go-to guy.
But yeah.
So that's the label. That's pretty much basically what it is. It's just me with the buddy who's funding, and me just kind of giving in to bands I believe in and friends I believe in. Some of my friends have shot me down. They're still very good friends, but they decided to go with someone else, which honestly, I support it. It's not a competition. You know, I've played with these guys side by side or toured with them, and I asked them in a very respectful way. It's like, hey, do you mind me looking over that contract real quick that you have with these guys? And it's like, yeah, let me look at it. It's like, I mean, I'm not trying to, in no way am I here to be a fucking asshole. Like, let me just look at it real quick. Just right. Make sure you know, second opinion. And, but they're doing good. I mean, like, I'm not afraid to let people know they have a bad deal. I'm not here to try to suck people into, like, hey, come with me because I'm going to show you the right thing. I'm going to show you the right way. You know, like, no, it's not what it's about.
It's just about making sure someone gets a fair shot. You know what I'm saying? I just nailed it. Knocked it out of the park with the name and everything.
Yeah. Nailed it. Literally literally the fucking name. Like, it's all about, you know, just we're trying. It's all about everybody getting a fucking fair shot.
Exactly.
You know, that's what it's about to me. Cause I've gone through the ringer. I've gone through some bullshit people. And, you know, I was in a band back in like 2006, 2007 that was on Eulogy Records, and I got to see a contract on that. And now that I look back at it now, I was like, that's fucking dog shit. It's a bad contract. It's a bad, I don't even know where Eulogy Records is now. I know they're based out of Florida, but I mean, I don't give a shit talking shit about them. I don't care that I'm talking shit about them. Like, they suck. Like, what they gave us was bullshit. Like, that was a bad fucking contract. You know, it's all about them, and it's not about the band. And at the end of the day, you know, as a newly found record label owner, I would like to tell any band that is listening, record labels are just a bunch of fucking door-to-door salesmen selling a product, and the product is you. That's all we are. That's all we are at the end of the day. And I firmly believe that.
Yeah. And the big thing is when you're dealing with labels, you got to make sure that, you know, they're selling you as a product, but you got to make sure that you're actually seeing some of the rewards also, not just them. You know, you got to watch out. So I would suggest everybody go to Jordan Haynes, record a record, and then go to Fair Shot Records and get a fair shot, bro. It's a 1-2 punch. You got to make it happen.
Absolutely.
Bands, yeah, and listeners, I mean, out there.
If the band's good, the band's great, we'll throw a video out for you. We'll give you the budget for a video. We'll give you the budget for an ad on AP. We'll give you the budget for all of that. Music is different now. You know, it's not CD. I know you remember back from our day, it was all about CD sales. CD sales, vinyl sales, cassette sales. Obviously, it's not about that anymore.
Yeah.
We're in a different place now. Like, it's all about bands who tour. It's all about bands that play shows. It's all about, I mean, if we want to get into a realistic number of what bands make on Spotify or Apple Music, I mean, we're talking 0.16 of a cent. Like, of a fucking cent. That's what we make on a play, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Until you get a little bit bigger, and then you kind of start getting more. But, you know, it's just one of those things. Like, we want to focus on the right things. People are like, hey, are you going to print CDs out for us? Like the new Street Sense record? Hell yeah, dude. I'm printing you out 100. And it's like, only 100? Well, when you think about only 100... then you step back and you think about how many people still listen to a fucking CD.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just not realistic.
Give them the old grandmother advice. Well, here, sell these and then come back for more. You know?
But, yeah, it's just like, well, that's the thing too. It's like, I'm not here to put bands into debt. I don't need them owing money for bullshit. You know, they're useless things.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if we're going to put money towards things, I just want things to go well. I want everybody to be a big, happy family, and I want all of us to be actually getting the rewards we deserve from this hard work. And, you know, that going back to, I mean, not trying to knock other labels at all. There's a lot of great labels out there, but at the same time, like I said before, there are a lot of them who just their bands are just a product.
Yeah, and they're a business out there to make money.
Yeah, I mean, and though at the end of the day, that's everybody's goal. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we want to be. I don't know. I think you and I as people, like, we want to stay in the music industry. We want to be a part of it. I don't want to lose that touch of, I don't want to lose that side of myself.
Right.
And that's where I want to be.
Yeah. I mean, you and I are one of the boys, you know what I'm saying? And you want to look out for the boys. You want to make sure that the next generation of, you know, the crew gets a, you know, gets what they rightfully deserve, not work hard for nothing. You know what I'm saying? Because we take care of each other out there on the road, and now that's what you're kind of doing with the label. You're taking care of them from now an executive standpoint, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, too, with a lot of bands is just, you know, a lot of bands, they have a lot of fun, and they play a lot of music, and they start playing a lot of shows, but they don't have that. Not saying that Street Sense doesn't, because they fucking do. They have a really good head on their shoulders. But there's definitely a lot of other bands out there who I've seen who just don't know what the next move is, like, as a band.
Right.
And when I see that, I want to step in and be like, well, not for the benefit of me, but for your benefit, here's your next move.
Right.
Like, we've done this shit. We've done it plenty of times. We're older. This is what your next move is.
Yeah. Here's how to get ahead much faster by learning from our mistakes that we made over the last decade. And that
is we've made a lot of mistakes.
Right, exactly. But I tell you what, Alex, as we're kind of winding down here, I know we've been talking for a long time, and we could probably do about 14 more of these episodes. But as we're as we're winding down here, where can people find you online? How can people find Concealer and Fair Shot Records?
So for Concealer, primarily I have, an Instagram, just Concealer Band is the Instagram. For the Facebook, we also got Concealer Band on there as well for Facebook.
Okay.
Other than that, there are videos coming out. You can always look it up on YouTube. We're on all platforms, Google Play and Apple Music, Spotify, whatever, you know, Amazon. But we got ourselves across all that. Basically, just look up Concealer Band and you can find us somewhere.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Alex, dude, it's been great catching up with you here, and I'm so glad we could have a good conversation. You got to come back for round two, and anybody on Fair Shot, feel free to send them my way, and we can help each other out, brother. I can be your press, or at least one press outlet for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to remember one last thing I wanted to throw out. I'm sure this is going to air before June 30th, but Fair Shot Records is having a release party for Street Sense and Concealer at the Highlands Tap Room on June 30th. And full bands. We're all going to be there, going to be playing some shows, selling some CDs, T-shirts, what have you. Should be a good time.
All right, guys, you heard it. You definitely got to go to the Highlands Tap Room. Go there, get wild. You know, everybody gets wild at the Tap Room. That's just what happens.
Oh, yeah.
So it is June 30th, Concealer release, Street Sense release. Everybody's going to be there. Everybody parties. You guys want to go there. So make sure you go. June 30th, Highlands Tap Room. I'm going to be there. And guys, don't forget to check out Concealer and Fair Shot Records online. And if you like what you heard today, and if you haven't already, like, share, and subscribe to Sean Versus Wild. It is on Facebook, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts from, dude. Do it. So, Alex, I guess I'll be seeing you June 30th. And it's going to be a great show.
Sounds great, brother.
So, all right, brother. Well, thank you so much for being on the show here today, Alex. And listeners out there, this has been the Sean Versus Wild Podcast.
Thank you for listening, DNN.